no session, no talk is complete without the wake-up call of cell phones. Have a look inside yourself and see if you're waiting for me to speak. Perhaps even some impatience arising. Irritation. Or your mind is taking you to some completely different place and time, tonight, later, tomorrow. We saw last night that in the normal human state of consciousness or unconsciousness, there is a very deep-seated need, psychological need, for the next moment, for future, that's always there. Everybody is waiting for something. It's the next moment or some point in the future. That is an intrinsic part of the normal human consciousness, which is identification with the stream of thinking, which is inhabiting a conceptualized reality, a conceptualized sense of self in the head, consisting of thought movement. A conceptualized sense of self, story-based, mind-based, past-based. And that conceptualized sense of self inhabits a conceptual reality. Because everything is then being perceived through the conditioning of that accumulated conditioning of the mind. Whatever you perceive is perceived through that and is conceptualized through the compulsive, automatic, mechanical labeling of every experience and sense perception that happens every moment. And through the automatic mechanical labeling process, a veil appears between you and that which is being perceived, between you and the other human being. It becomes deadened through the continuous mental label making, continuous judgments, and it's mechanical, it's automatic. Very few people on the planet are even aware of it. As yet, something else is arising powerfully, but as yet, very few human beings are even aware of this mechanical process because they are totally identified with that mechanical compulsive, automatic process. And that is the essence of unconsciousness. You are lost in a world of content, and your sense of self is in there. Then everything you perceive is perceived through that sense of self that is mentalized, conceptualized. And then whatever happens to you, every experience, every encounter, every perception, every place that you go to, is seen through that filter of that ultimately fictitious, false me, sense of self, that adopts a personalized position, a reactive position towards whatever happens. And it interprets it according to that deep-seated conditioning. And so life becomes very problematic because nothing is seen clearly, nothing is simple. Everything is complex, conflict-ridden, and problematic through the labeling process. And that is the self, the mind-made self. That is the egoic entity, the me, the little me. And as we saw yesterday, never at ease, except very brief moments for a little while. Never sensing a sense of completeness, a true deep aliveness, rootedness, free of fear. Fear is an inevitable companion of that state of unconsciousness. And so you're always waiting for completion in the next moment to add something to me. We saw that yesterday. The need, the compulsive need to add more content to me. So we are stepping out of that. This is why we are here tonight. Not to add more to all those identifications, to all that content, but to allow a different state of consciousness to arise that is unconditioned. To step out of a conceptualized sense of self, out of the story of me, to see an infinitely deeper and vaster sense of who you are that is already there underneath all the mind movements. Underneath the story of me with my past and suffering, underneath the grievances that the ego loves so much, underneath the reactivity that the egoic entity thrives on, just looking for the next thing, for the next problem. The complaints that it loves. Complaining makes up a large part of many people's mind movement. If you look into it clearly, how much of that incessant stream of thinking is actually complaining? Some form of complaint in your head about this person, this situation, this place. And that movement of carrying grievances, the need to be reactive, adopt a reactive relationship to everything that happens, the complaining, the pattern of continuous complaining and looking for the next thing because it strengthens that never enough sense of me, and people don't realize that through complaining, mentally or verbally, and I'm not saying complaining to tell somebody, please don't step on my foot, remove your foot from my foot. You're not complaining, you're telling somebody to do something about it. That's not complaint. To say, we are using it in another sense here, to tell somebody, please, this is the soup is cold, I ordered a hot soup, take it back, please. It's not a complaint, this is telling somebody to do something about this situation. So we're not talking about you becoming a doormat and let everything happen. We're talking about a mental, useless, pointless, futile, conditioned movement that thrives on complaining. He shouldn't, they shouldn't, why don't they, this is dreadful. Oh, if you see the percentage of your mind activity that is some form of complaint, you would be amazed, and there's nothing personal in it. It is not your personal problem. It's not that, oh, I'm not good enough, I'm always complaining. It's nothing to do with you. It's the collective human mind. It is a collective mind pattern that the egoic mind-based entity loves. Because the sense of self through any kind of complaint, and a lot of that happens in people's minds, they're complaining, they may even be complaining about themselves. Not good enough, you see you failed again, you see you always mad. And people are so immersed in that, they think all the problems that they are complaining about have an actual reality out there. And don't realize that every situation is very simple. If you don't add all that to it, it is simple. So to watch that need to complain, so that it is there, so that the egoic entity can feel a little bit stronger. Why does it feel a little bit stronger in that mind movement? Because whenever you complain about something or someone or a place, you adopt a position of rightness. Me, right. You, wrong. Because that which you are complaining about is obviously wrong. The complainer, the me, the mind-based entity, is obviously right. That is the essence of every complaint, that I am right and the situation or the place or the person or the condition that I am internally complaining about obviously is wrong. So some people move through life complaining about the world, the God. They have an issue with God. He should know better. Why does he allow that? If I were running the universe, I would do a better job. If the universe or the earth or the planet, the world, the question arises, if the world were a reflection of your inner state, what kind of a world would it be? So to watch these deep-seated mind movements, and even here it may arise, the mind looking for one thing to complain about so that you don't have to listen to the rest. And then the mind can focus on that one thing. I disagree with that statement. And for the next hour, you have a mind movement around that disagreement. And you're hoping that there'll be an opportunity for you to get up and say, I disagree very strongly with you because it's wrong. What you said is wrong. That's very satisfying. Now, this is easy to do here, because in spiritual teaching, the purpose of it is not to present a philosophy, a consistent view of the universe, a system of thought with an inner consistency that is then you can then adopt. One more thing I can identify with and say, now this mental edifice, all those explanations, this is now what I believe in. But a spiritual teaching is not like that. The purpose of the words is not to help you understand the universe. The purpose of the words is simply to point to the state of liberation. So the words may point to bondage so that the awareness arises of the mental prison that you inhabit. Now that awareness is the arising of freedom. The simple fact of seeing the bondage of identification with the mental noise, continuous mind movement and its reactions and its grievances and its complaints, to see that in oneself is already the arising of something that is beyond that which you see. The seeing, which is the aware presence, and this is why we're here, is unconditioned. It simply sees. It sees the false. It sees illusion. This is why, as this arises here, and all the words are only designed to be pointers to the liberated state of consciousness. But if that liberated state of consciousness were not already arising in you, this is the only reason why you've come here, well, except for one or two who got dragged here by somebody else and didn't really want to come, but it's unlikely that they will stay, unless suddenly something opens up within them. That's possible too. But for most of you, you came here by your own free will, probably. Yes, it is possible that one or two came for the wrong reasons. Perhaps thinking that this was a lecture on philosophy, of playing around with thoughts, finding some new interesting thoughts. And then, perhaps after half an hour or an hour, it won't be satisfying here to sit here anymore, and then you would go. And that's fine. You need a little bit more time. The universe is very patient. There's time goes on and on. There's a lot of it. It doesn't matter. But most of you, if you are able to sit here, and it's quite a long evening. The physical body may occasionally move a little bit, and may hurt here. And yet, if you are able to sit here, during all this time, this means already a state of consciousness that is unconditioned is arising, and that is what I am addressing here. This is what is being touched, pulled, all words are limited, one could say almost it is being pulled out of you. And the first step in this process is the recognition of that which is false, which is identification with all the conditioned thought movements as a me, a self, a story-based entity with a little past and a little future. A past that didn't go quite the way it should have gone. Oh, and you thought that was your personal problem. It's everybody's. It didn't go quite the way, it didn't quite work out the way it was meant to. it wasn't the one I married, it was, I must have made a mistake. It wasn't, he wasn't the prince that I married, I thought I married. He turned out to be a human. No story-based me has a totally satisfying story. And many story-based identities are actually unhappy ones, very unhappy ones, that tell themselves internally, almost continuously, their unhappy story in order to revive it. What he did to me, and the world did to me, and my parents did to me, unfairly treated, what God did allowed to happen to me. And so some of these identities are very unhappy ones, and the egoic entity loves that also, because at least you think you know who you are by repeating the story to yourself mentally. It gives you the illusion that you have an identity. And you have an identity of sorts. It's a storyline, an unhappy one, and you can carry the grievances and the complaints associated with the unhappy story of me, and they keep the sense of self going until you finally are on your deathbed. And maybe your last breath may still be a complaint. Why did life do that to me? That was my incarnation, my life. It should never have happened. It was one big mistake. And it's amazing how many people carry a very unhappy identity based on their past. Hoping vaguely that somehow the future is going to free them and somehow make this unhappy story turn around into a happy one. But how could it? Because your sense of self is now totally wedded to the unhappy story. Your sense of self lies in the unhappy story. How could it ever turn around? You don't even want it to turn around because your sense of self is the unhappy one. You feel comfortable with that. Of course, it's unconscious. If you made it conscious and looked at it and see that you are actually, you love your unhappy story. And every story has elements of that. Some stories are very unhappy, but every story has strong elements of that. And then you can see how much there is a refusal to let go of that. Mind movements, all those mind movements. And on the surface, those mind moves might say, oh, maybe my life will get better. You might visit clairvoyance to find out if the story of me is going to improve in the next few years. Is there going to be a change? And the clairvoyant says, yes, I can see a change coming next year. There is somebody coming into your life. And he or she is going to make you happy. Everything will turn around. But you carry the unhappy me. And even if that wonderful being should come into your life, you will interact and react through your unhappy story. And you will make that relationship, you will incorporate that into your unhappy story. And so then you try another clairvoyant, because so it is amazing the prisons that people have constructed for themselves, that they inhabit and even are addicted to. the pain of that. Because it's better than not knowing who you are. At least you have an unhappy sense of self, better than no sense of self. So every story has strong elements of that, and to see that even if your story is not totally unhappy, maybe it's half-half. But to see it didn't go the way it was meant to go. But of course you still have future, it can all work out. It won't, of course. Dissatisfaction, unease, problems, fear, anxiety, they're all built into the very structure of that mindset. It's within the structure of the mindset when you identify with mind movements, when you derive your sense of self from a story. You can never get there on that level of complete your sense of self, find yourself fully, the fullness of life. So, and we are here to see it, and already you may see it is, you might think, well, it must be, isn't it very depressing? You are telling us a very depressing story of how our lives are. No, you may detect in yourself a certain recognition. It's quite nice to listen to this. And you recognize something there, and you see it, and the seeing is already freeing. And all the words that arise here, and this is the case with every true spiritual teaching, are not to explain the universe, and are not even going to be consistent. A philosophical system may be consistent, otherwise it's deficient. But a spiritual teaching, be very suspicious of a spiritual teaching that is totally consistent internally, where everything makes absolute sense. It is likely that you are mistaking a philosophical system for a spiritual teaching. Spiritual teaching, by its very nature, contains contradictions, because the truth of who you are, and it only points to that, it points to the false, you begin to see the false, and then it points to that which is beyond the false. But seeing the false is already that movement of the real, who you are beyond that conditioning. To see that is already the arising of that. So the spiritual teaching points to that which really is very hard to talk about. And no single thought could capture, encapsulate the truth of who you are and the truth of spiritual liberation. And it is very tempting for the mind to get hold of one statement and say, this is the truth, and the other statement is not true. But in spiritual teaching, you may hear two contradictory statements and they're both true. For example, last night I said, nothing needs to happen. Freedom is already here, underneath the movement of the conditioned mind. There is already in you the vast spaciousness, stillness, and depth of the unconditioned. So there's nothing that needs to happen as such, and yet, in the course of this evening, I may point out certain things that look as if you could do something about it. For example, I might say, enter the state of surrender to what is this moment. So you want me to do something. But I thought you said, it's not an happening. There's nothing you need to do. Well, maybe surrender is not a doing at all. It's an allowing. But it looks, when one speaks of it, as if it were, as if you could do something. Many statements, the timeless, we are entering the timeless state of consciousness. It arises because the conditioned state is totally linked to time. It operates, this conditioned entity, the mind-made self, operates entirely through past and future. It knows only past and future, and the future is a repetition of the past. The redemptive power of now is totally obscured. The only place of freedom is obscured by that mind movement that is only interested in past and future. But that basically means it is only interested in repeating the past, and that is what usually happens. So, we are here to step out of that. All the words only point to the state that is timeless, the state of consciousness that is timeless, and we are entering that together. At the moment, I've mostly been speaking of the bad news, but that is important. The bad news, the illusory entity, and the suffering that is created by that, we need to see that fully. That is already the beginning of liberation, but it looks on the surface as if I were talking only about bad news. And if you don't listen from the depths of your being, if you only listen through the story entity, I'm not addressing the story-based entity, but there may be one or two of you here who listen to these words only through the mind-made story-based entity, and it will feel insulted by these words. How dare you suggest that my grievances and my complaints are not justified and real? How dare you say that I have no right to complain, to suggest it's an illusion. My complaints are so real, and I have a right. This is the entity. And so one or two of you go through this reaction. Who is reacting when I point to illusion within yourself and there is a reaction? Who is it that is reacting? The illusion. It doesn't like to hear that. It feels it's a great insult to suggest that perhaps the unhappiness that you carry as part of your sense of self could perhaps be an illusion, an illusory identity that you cling to. But many of you are still sitting here. One or two are going to walk out. Maybe three or four or five or six. A small percentage. It is not, that means those words are not reaching the deeper level of your being, are not being received by that. They only hit the conditioned, and the conditioned doesn't like what it's hearing because I'm threatening its very survival. Let's get out of here. and perhaps even shout something as the last triumph of the conditioned entity. It's happened once or twice in meetings. Absolute nonsense. And the door slams. So the words, something within you, if you're still here, recognizes the truth. And it actually feels good to see the false as false. You're already no longer totally identified with those mind movements through that seeing. So the pointing to the false and the pointing to the real, which are both part of this teaching, may very well use seemingly contradictory perspectives. The timeless state of consciousness, we are entering the unconditioned or timeless state of consciousness, is emerging here, so that you don't derive your sense of self anymore from the conditioned mind movements, but from that which is beyond time, the still, alert, vibrantly alive presence, vast, intelligent, that is there underneath all that. But we have another contradiction here, because as we are entering the timeless state of consciousness, and we are spending 3 hours on this time. Yes, there's a little paradox here, but it's fine. You could say, well, why don't we only need one moment? And we travel deeper into that state, which is another paradox. Because to say deeper implies time. But let's, instead of resolving the paradox, just leave it, because it's not an explanation. They are simply pointers. So to see the false in oneself, to observe those mind movements, to recognize that your story, your identity, your sense of self is not the only one that didn't quite work out. This, you can, sometimes people are under that illusion that other people's stories have worked. None of them works for long. Meet famous people, rich people, go beyond the glossy surface that you see in magazines, talk to them, meet them, and see enormous sense of dissatisfaction, lack, fear, not enough. So they need more, even more. You could become a great leader. Leader of this country. And then you might think, oh, I finally made it. My life has now become free of limitation. I'm all powerful. And 2 years later, you find yourself in prison. If you're lucky. And you have another limitation. So, there's the movement of thought. There's identification with the movement of thought. And there's the arising of the awareness of those thought movements. And then, as the awareness arises, you see we've already pointed to grievances, we've pointed to complaints, we've pointed to repeating the story in your head to reinforce it. We've pointed to, perhaps, or maybe we didn't, it's also to repeat your story to other people, to reinforce it. Please confirm to me that my problems and my story are real. Listen. And oh, yes. You truly have been treated unfairly by life. You are right that you're feeling sorry for yourself. You're fully sorry for myself. That's, self feels bigger in that too. So we've seen many of those very predominant movements associated with living in and through a false sense of self. And now there's one more fundamental one that we need to address. I pointed to it last night, that it needs to obscure the now, because it can only function through past and future. So as we saw last night, if you live through that false sense of self, your relationship with now, which is all there ever is, which means with life, life itself, life and now are inseparable, your relationship with now is predominantly a hostile one, a resisting one, one that denies the now, tries to get away from it, resists it internally, complains about it mentally, or makes it into a stepping stone to the next moment, which the little me in the head says is a more important one, because there it's going to be a little bit better when I arrive there.